My name is Michelle O'Roon, and I'm carrying out this interview today on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date is the 14th of August 2009. The time is 4:24 a.m. Could you tell me, please, your name, your age, and where you come from?
My name is Linda Davies-Jones. I am 31 years old and I come from Belfast.
How are you feeling?
Fine. A wee bit warm and very tired, but otherwise fine.
When did you come down from Belfast?
I left Belfast today. I got a flight at 3 o'clock. I arrived in Stansted at 4, I think. And then arrived in London, I don't know, 6 or something.
What have you been doing since then?
I have been in and around Soho. I have been to a chip shop cum jazz cafe in Camden. I've been up Primrose Hill. And then finally back to Trafalgar Square again.
Are those the sorts of things you normally do when you're in London?
No. I'd probably go to sleep at some stage if I was in London, but not tonight.
Can you remember how you first heard about the project?
Yeah, my friend, Ruth, I think she was in London and found out about it and came back raving about the idea and really wanted all of her closest friends to apply, and we all thought it was a great idea as well, so we all applied.
What is it about the project that appeals to you, do you think?
That anyone do it. That it is properly for the people, art for the people, and that the people will do it and they will be picked at random and they have an hour to be themselves. And I just love that idea because, I don't know, well, a lot of people have a concept that art is completely inaccessible and it is for a certain class and that only certain people can appreciate it, and this is handing it back to the people and letting them do their own thing. So I know that you have to be picked, but once you're picked you can do what you want.
How did you feel when you were picked?
I was delighted and nervous at the same time. I've had many sleepless nights waking up going, what am I going to do on the booth? I've had a real panic and I've changed my mind lots of times just because various things I thought that's not going to work in the end. So finally, it was only like 2 weeks ago that I finally settled on what I was going to do. So,
what are you going to do with your hour?
My plan is to have a pulley from the plinth down to the square. It was to be the fountain, but that isn't going to work, and so it's going to be a paddling pool and float paper boats and paper lilies that I've made. And the whole idea is that we're hopefully going to put little candles in them. I'm a mental health nurse and work with people who have mental health problems, and I used to work with the homeless as well. And I wanted the idea that it would be little lights of hope for the people that I see every day who really struggle, because I work with people with serious mental illness, people who suffer from schizophrenia and bipolar illness, and that, you know, it's enduring mental illness, it's not going to go away, and that they've got it for life, and sometimes hope can be something that's missing or feels like it's missing, but it isn't. There is hope there, and this is just to represent that, and not to forget them as well, because there's people with mental health problems who are in prison and in homeless shelters and sleeping on the streets, and they've been in hospital for a long time and they feel that they've been abandoned and forgotten about, and this is just a little thought for them.
Can you tell me a bit more about your role?
Well, I only became a mental health nurse recently. I only qualified last August, but I was working with the homeless community before that. I started off when I was 20. I worked in the Simon community in Cork, in the south of Ireland, and it was a rough and ready hostel. It was a 37-bed hostel, and it.
What kind of people were living there?
Mostly rough sleepers would have come in and out. They would have mostly been from Ireland, but others who had come from further afield, most of them had long-term addictions to either to alcohol or some other drugs, and you know they had been living on the streets for years and years, and I loved working there. I mean, it was rough work and it was hard work, but it was brilliant, but because it was a great acceptance of people as well. You know, there's other charities ask people to make a lot of changes to their life, and that means then that, you know, those people can't make those changes, and then they end up back on the street again. and the hostel that I worked in didn't ask that of anybody. You know, they accepted them as they were, and if that meant that they had the shirt on their back and a bottle of whiskey, that was it. And it was, you know, it was sad because we saw people die, but we also prevented people from dying on the street. You know, they died with someone who knew their name and with a bit of dignity. You know, they got a warm bed and food, someone to talk to, and you know, a lot of people, that's all they're going to get. So there was also a lot of people who, looking back on it now, had severe mental health problems that were never dealt with, which is why I wanted to become a mental health nurse in the end, because I got so fed up and so frustrated of not being able to access services for homeless people who had mental health problems. And now that I come across them in the health service, I feel that I'm better qualified to deal with them because I have experience of working with homeless people, so I know their issues as well as how to deal with mental health problems. So I love my work. I really enjoy it. It's brilliant.
Is it a centre you work in?
No, I work in
a hospital.
It's a hospital. Yeah, it's a hospital. I work in a male ward for men between 18 and 65. Who are acutely mentally unwell. So,
how do they cope with the knowledge that their condition is for life?
Sometimes they don't cope well at all. They can't accept it. A lot of times that would get mixed in with their mental health problem. So instead of believing that they have a mental health problem, they believe that they have been, that they are being bugged by somebody. You know, if they hear voices, it's not because they have a mental illness, it's because of something else. They need another explanation because it's just too hard to accept that you're living with a mental health problem for life. So it is really hard for some of them. It's really tough, and there's a lot of young guys. We've seen a lot of youngsters who have serious mental health problems. Sometimes it's to do with drugs, which have, you know, destabilised their mental health and brought it on. Which is really sad, because it was ultimately avoidable. But that's what's happening to people's mental health at the minute. And then there's a lot of others. There's depression, but we wouldn't see that as much. We would see people who have more psychotic illnesses, people who have hallucinations and delusions and that sort of thing, which can be really hard to live with and really hard for their families to live with as well. And it's about supporting them and supporting their families to help them deal with it. Some will get better, some will not. They'll maintain a level that they're at, and some will get progressively worse. And that's hard for families to watch and hard for people themselves to cope with, because they think they're going to improve and they're not. That's really sad. I don't know how I would deal with that if it was me. So it's tough.
Is it difficult to ensure that they comply with their medication, that they take their drugs?
Yeah, it is. It can be a struggle. But then at the same time, if I was prescribed some of the medication that they were prescribed, I don't know if I would take it.
Why do you say that?
Because the antipsychotics, they're neuroleptic medication, and some of them have really nasty side effects. You know, they might take away the voices, but you might put on 3 or 4 stone. Or you can have side effects. The older antipsychotics would make people have strange hand movements and strange facial tics and like shuffling movements, and you know, it means that it's obvious that they have some sort of problem. Other people just don't like taking tablets every day. You know, they feel better and they don't want to take them anymore. There's also a lot of people who'd be skeptical of them because there's a lot of, you know, pharmaceuticals, big money, and psychiatry in particular is big money because people are on those tablets for a long, long time. And the brain is a mystery. It's a big mystery. I mean, they know about the rest of the body because they can cut it up and take it apart. The brain, they only know so much. So that, you know, they don't really know what works, because what works for one person does not work for the next person, because mental health is not all about drugs. It's about a lot more than giving somebody a tablet. So yes, I can't. Sometimes the tablets really do work, and I have seen when they really do work, but equally I've seen that people on them, and they don't work at all. You know, there's
What do you do when you're not working?
Lots of stuff. I like to read, I love the cinema, I like cycling, I love being outside, I like gardening, I like travelling, I like lying in the sunshine on the odd day that it is sunny. Yeah, I like being outside.
What would you say is important in your life at the moment?
A bit of adventure. Adventure in life. Just enjoying my life and making the most of it, I think. Because I see people, you know, stuck in hospital whose lives are really tough, I really feel that, you know, if you have good health and you have your opportunities, you should take them. I think a lot of people don't know the privileges that they have and they waste them. I feel like I know what my privileges are in life and I'm going to use them, because there's so many people who can't. And I want to enjoy as much as I can, and this is a real privilege, this is an honour, like, to be able to do this. So I want to use it and I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy my art up there. Yeah.
How would you describe yourself as a person?
I don't know, I find that a really hard question. I don't know.
Did you write on the...
Yeah, I think I said I was sparky. That wasn't my definition of it, that was my husband's definition of me. It was sparky. I think adventurous and community. Community's important to me, a sense of community that you're not... I like the idea of one another, that you're not just one, you're part of something else. You're always part of something else, even if you don't want to be. And I think that's a real Western sickness that's really not good for us. Like a cult of individualism, that you think you stand on your own. You don't. You can't. And when you do, it's not good for you. I used to live in Sweden and they have a really high percentage of like one bedroom flats. So I don't know, like something like 40% of people live on their own. They also have a really high rate of depression and suicide. Because it's not... I don't think it's good for us to live on our own in an isolation like that. Your community is important. Your relation to other people is important.
What were you doing in Sweden?
My husband's Swedish. So I lived there 3.5 years.
After you met and married?
Yeah, we met in Cork. We met when we worked in the homeless hostel. So we traipsed around after each other. And then finally, when I went to Sweden for 3.5 years, and then he came back to Ireland with me.
How did you find living in Sweden?
It was great. I mean, it's a great country, but it's very cold. I just could not take the winter because it went on forever. It was freezing. And I mean, Ireland is not that cold in the winter. It's not that warm in the summer either. It's sort of continuous, but that means it's green year round. So March and April were the worst months, because in Ireland it would be spring and there'd be tulips and daffodils and crocuses and snowdrops. In Sweden everything was just dead. There was nothing. I can't wait any longer. Where's the spring? It eventually come sometime in May. When it did come, it was spectacular. It would all come at once and it was absolutely beautiful. And the nights in Ireland are long, but in Sweden they're just forever. I love the long evenings in summer. They're unbelievable and the light is beautiful, really beautiful. It also made me manic, like, because I couldn't sleep and I just wanted to be up. All
that
the time.
Contributes to the depression.
Well, not summer, but in the winter, yes, when you've got no light whatsoever. They give if you're a foreigner to Sweden and you live there and you get depression in the winter, they do give you like free light boxes and stuff, because so many people get seasonally adjusted or seasonally affective disorder.
Were there any other things about it really made an impact on you? In terms of the differences?
Just a different way of life. Their society works very differently because they pay high taxes and their services work better. They have a far... they're less inclined to give to charity. There's nowhere near as many charitable organisations, and they tend to be less charitable to each other because they would be of the opinion that the state should... that's the state's job, they should fix it. Which is right, because you know, the state is supposed to in Sweden, but it doesn't always. So it's good in one way because the society does work, but in the at the other end of it means that this individual thing takes over and there's not the same sense of social cohesion. I didn't think from living at home and in different places, I didn't think it was the same. People did not look out for each other in the same way in Sweden as they would here.
Were you working then?
Yeah, I did. I worked, I taught English for a while, which I hated with a passion because I wasn't very good at it. I had to teach teenagers. That was not good. And then I worked in the health service with a woman with MS and her two children and a guy with a learning disability, which is a service that you would never get here. If you're under 65 and you have an illness like MS, you should never end up in a nursing home. You should have personal care at home, so you get someone at home to look after you, which is a good service. That does not exist here. We have a lot of people under 65 in nursing homes who can't stay at home anymore. Who can't get that level of care. So there's definitely plenty of good things about it, like well functioning society on some levels.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Just that I think this is a brilliant project. I really do, and you know, it was worth travelling the distance for. And when I applied, I was definitely prepared to do it if I got the chance to be on the plinth. And I know that my friends who've applied are desperate to get on it as well. Just it's a different idea. Nobody's done anything like it before, and it's there for the taking. Pledge.
Thank you very much.